For me, the Holy Grail is actual personalized medicine, where if by chance, I think I shared this with you yesterday. So this is what the synergy
between in truth,
if I get breast cancer, I want to be able to have my stem cells regenerated, breast stem cells, my breast tissue regenerated in a lab and have medications, drugs tested for my tissue.
Right.
And I would know with almost absolute certainty if it will work or if it will not. And I won't have to suffer through a clinical trial.
I think sometimes the uncertainty is actually the thing that perpetuates the trauma of going through an illness. Yeah.
Welcome to the Global Affair podcast, brought to you by Love Out Loud, the world's largest love-based movement, actualizing a civilization of love by 2030. My name's Nicole Gibson, and join me and some of the world's brightest minds as we bring some of the most important and controversial conversations of our time into a space of unity. It's important to know that as your host, this isn't about my personal opinion or bias, but rather an opportunity to listen with love, honesty, curiosity, and reveal the true universal experience us humans have amongst the differences. So if you love the show, please let us know by giving us a rating and tell us how to make this conversation easier for other people to jump into as well. And with that, let's get it.
Florina and Dean, welcome to the Global Affair podcast. I am really, really excited. I know I always say this, but I have really been wanting to do an episode about outer space. And I know there's many things we're probably going to cover in this episode, but this is where I really want us to kick off. So Dean from the Methuselah Foundation and Florina from the Center of Contemporary Sciences, how did both of you start your work in space?
Methuselah Foundation got started in 2000. We were probably, we're one of the first nonprofits in the longevity biotech sort of space. And after about 10 years of working on stuff that's directly aimed at reversing aging, we started thinking about replacement approaches. And so we started looking at, okay, bioengineering of whole organs, cryopreservation of organs and tissues and that sort of thing. And so we started developing a challenge around that. So Methuselah Foundation for a long time has always been very interested in using challenges and open innovation as, you know, a lever for starting innovation and for creating ecosystems and getting communities together and galvanized to try to accomplish some sort of goal. So in around 2010 or so, we started looking hard at that. And after trying to develop that challenge for about 3 years, we realized that it was not going to work. And so we scaled down and focused specifically on microvasculature, which is a key rate limiter in developing or engineering whole organs. And so from there, I guess it was just like one of those friend of a friend sort of situations. We had Josh Newbert, who's amazing, who was working with us on developing the criteria for the challenge. And he had worked on, I forget the name of it, but a pretty substantial like collegiate rocket sort of challenge. I think it was a collegiate challenge, but it was making rockets. And so he knew folks in the space industry and he said, hey, maybe you guys should look at doing this with NASA for the human research program. So obviously, in space, you have like these single points of failure. It's pretty difficult to give somebody healthcare in an environment like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that was totally it. It was like, okay, this makes sense. It's useful science to do, period. But it's also a risk mitigating measure that can be, when you get the technology there, you're able to replace tissues on demand for astronauts. So that's how that got started.
It's
so
funny that you said that, because the strategy for Methuselah Foundation at the time, we called it New Parts for People.
New Parts for Nice People.
New Parts for Nice People.
If you're a bad person, you don't get a new part.
I think the analogy that David Goebel, the CEO of Methuselah Foundation, made, and I totally aligned to this as soon as he mentioned this to me, was that with cars, you have a dysfunctional car part. You replace that part and the car continues running. You don't just go buy a new car. You could if you wanted to. Practically speaking, you replace that part. Why do we not do that for people? So we did a deep dive into the problems with organ transplantation, the really long lists, the fact that somebody would have to be on a list for years potentially and may even die while waiting for an organ that may never come. And if it does come, it comes from somebody who has died before them. And so we thought that's not a very sustainable model, nor is it very good, because when you acquire a new organ, you're on a lifetime of very powerful suppressants that makes you vulnerable for a host of other illnesses and diseases.
It's not customized for you. Like,
exactly.
And with this case, you can customize it with your own stem cells, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
The stem cells from the material.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. With your own stem cells.
So interesting. And are you 3D printing these organs? Mm-hmm. Is that the...
Yeah, you can. You can either grow them in culture or using scaffold and that sort of thing.
This is so wild.
Yeah. You can 3D print them. And actually, one of the things that's really nice about space in that regard is that doing 3D printing in space is much more effective when it comes to biologics.
Why?
Microgravity, yeah.
Yeah, because in microgravity. So like when you think about a baby in the wound, in the womb, the organs grow like radially. They grow like this.
Right.
Right. They're not printed like 2D stacks. Mm-hmm. And so in microgravity, you're able to put cells exactly where they need to go in a very flexible fashion.
And this is being done right now.
Yeah.
The successful printing of, have you actually done transplants?
They've definitely done some grafting and things like that.
Right.
Grafting of organ grafting as well. But it's like smaller pieces and that sort of stuff.
I recently learned about this because I was at the Wake Forest Regenerative Medicine Institute and Dr. Doris, were you there at the World Stem Cell Summit?
Yes.
I didn't see you
either. And that was not like,
that was 2 months ago.
that was a very small summit. And I remember listening to a lecture by Dr. Doris Taylor and what she was presenting absolutely blew my mind. Yeah. And then the next segment was about space and how this is more the microgravity research labs in space that are going to potentially print organs. And then what, like they're going to FedEx it back to Earth? Like,
you know, it's kind of a weird one, honestly. There's so many things that are easier to produce in space, but ultimately it does come down to a matter of like economics. I think now it's much, much cheaper than it used to be. And there are some payload providers who are much faster than others. It's been the standard where if you're trying to find, so an increment is like you're actually having to get an assigned group of people up there to work on something. So to get assigned an increment usually would take like a minimum 18 months to actually be able to do an experiment. Like we actually are sending two experiments to the ISS. Because we're sending the winners from the Vascular Tissue Challenge to the ISS. So there are a couple of teams from Wake Forest And so we're sending them there, but it's from the time that we like signed the paper to the time it's going to get there, it's going to be like 3 years.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Mm-hmm. When you think about how fast science moves, you can do something terrestrially and then it takes you 3 years to validate or to get data from what it's going to do in microgravity, like proper microgravity, not simulated microgravity.
Yeah. There was a panel discussion on this and I brought up the fact that I mean, I'm not for this, but I was just curious. But like, would you potentially have nanoparticles monitoring the transplant, giving you like feedback in real time if it's working out for you?
That's an interesting idea.
If so, how?
We've not discussed that. To clarify, with the Vascular Tissue Challenge, the Wake Forest Institute team, a regenerative medicine institute team, what they did was actually kept fully vascularized tissue. I believe it was liver tissue.
Yeah.
Fully functional outside of a lab for 30 days.
Wow.
And that was 3D printed tissue. That is a milestone. It sounds like not that big of a deal, but a significant milestone towards one day regenerating an entire organ from a patient's own stem cells.
Wow. This is incredible work, you two. So let's just zoom out to the time that we're interplanetary beings. What do you think about this? And do you think about how your work now is going to actually inform that time?
Oh, man, that's a cool question.
The Vascular Tissue Challenge was our first foray with NASA, and it was we felt it was a wonderful partnership. And so we were tapped for the Deep Space Food Challenge. Now, that one is also very interesting because...
What a title. I love it.
We're originally going to call it the Deep Space Food Race, which is just
also great.
Flows off pretty easily.
But the Deep Space Food Challenge is really about competing teams building a hyper-efficient food production system that required minimal inputs and maximum outputs of food that astronauts would actually want to eat, but that was also nutritious.
Yeah. How did this go?
So,
what was the biggest breakthrough in innovation?
Oh, man, that's a good question. So we started out with something like 250 teams. We're now down to 8 teams, 5 actually.
How do they get knocked out? What is the process of, how do you fail the challenge?
Like Flo was saying, they're looking for an extremely efficient food system. Uh-huh. So sometimes it's just not really meeting that criteria. Right. Or if it's maybe seen by subject matter experts to be too speculative or too even potentially not safe, in that there's a high likelihood of pathogens coming in. It's the riskiest possible environment to be in. Like, space is trying to kill you. It's the worst place to be. You have to have a food system that's pretty much foolproof. It's got to be amazing. It's got to never break. It's got to be almost entirely automated as much as you possibly can be, because the crew has almost no time to actually operate it. It's a very high standard. And so really just over time, just gradually working through and finding the best of the best.
People don't really think about how food and nutrition impacts your psychology, impacts your emotional and mental
Unfortunately, health. They don't.
It's not really much of a conversation starter, but it is true. Studies show with NASA that it's a huge morale boost. It's one of the biggest morale boosts for the astronauts to receive the resupply. Right. So they get fresh food from Earth.
How does that happen?
They can eat greens.
They send a rocket up.
Yeah.
And then they...
Then someone is actually in, or it's just a supply rocket?
I think it's a supply rocket. They don't. I mean, if they're going to send somebody up as well, then they might do that.
I believe it's typically unmanned.
Yeah.
But for long duration missions, that's not a possibility. Yeah, there will be no resupply. So what they need is a hyper efficient food production system that's fully... It's a... What do you call it?
A closed loop, circular ecosystem that's sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, he's so great with the technical terms. That's why I brought him.
Wait, we have to bring that up. You two are married, right?
Yes.
17 years?
17 years.
Yeah, 16.
16. Congratulations. Also, it took me 2 years to remember my anniversary, by the way. I am not a numbers person or a dates person.
So I'm assuming the first kind of major use case would be a trip to Mars, a 3-year trip to Mars. Is that kind of what you're seeing as the next kind of moonshot to get this working?
Yeah, that's the aspiration. That's the intent. So the challenge itself is designed so for like maximal terrestrial impact as well. So we didn't demand teams.
Not maximum extraterrestrial impact.
extraterrestrial impact. Coming soon to the
if it passed the taste test with
those guys. Extraterrestrial impact sounds like a panspermia, actually.
Yeah. I like that.
But what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the intention, like, this is trying to think ahead for those really long duration missions. So mission to Mars is like 3 to 5 years. Yeah. And so the current paradigm of shelf stable foods just doesn't really work so great. Mm-hmm. They're still going to probably use a decent amount of that, but the nutritive quality of that stuff drops off like crazy very quickly. And so you need to be able to produce more food in situ. You need to be able to do it there.
I'm about to humble brag here, but
please.
The Deep Space Food Challenge has been more successful or has had more traction than all of NASA's previous challenges combined. And that is also, I think it's because of the culture and the timing. The war in Ukraine was going on when we launched this. Mm. Food scarcity has been a big deal. For the first time ever, the U.S. life expectancy has gone down and food scarcity has gone up.
Yeah.
Mm. And the White House actually held a big to-do about this. But it's the terrestrial applications of this technology that we were really interested in as well. I come from the Philippines. That's a developing country. I still have relatives who may be going hungry. And that breaks my heart. That should not have to happen. Throughout the pandemic, the U.S. hunger rates and below poverty line stats are heartbreaking. Mm. And so what can we do that might help impact the health of normal human beings, the citizens of Earth?
So the utility.
Through these technologies. Yes.
And so I don't think we actually got to the specific answer of the question. What were some of the biggest breakthroughs in innovation?
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting teams. Now that we're towards the end, a lot of the teams are producing single cell protein by using like a CO2 electrolysis fermentation process. So air goes in, some electricity and some bacteria, and then you end up with a very nutritious product at the end, which then can be constituted into a number of different things. You can make pseudo meat, you can make pseudo cheese, you can make bread, you can make all sorts of fun stuff from it.
Protein from air.
Yeah.
It's literally protein from air.
If that's not an indication that we can instantaneously manifest, I don't know what is. that is like a bridge to being able to be like steak up here. But you spoke about the psychological implications of food, right? This is just a personal curiosity. How are people sort of processing that type of food once it's been created psychologically? Are they excited to eat it? Is there a bit of a barrier to be able to cross there for people?
So there's other teams that are doing more grow-oriented operations. It's basically a very compact garden that, you know, it's got 20, it's like 20 cubes, which all produce something and then they all feed into each other. And at the end, you have a bunch of different vegetables and things that you can eat. So that's totally no, you know, nothing esoteric.
Interstellar permaculture.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's blowing my mind.
Just to really quickly point out the mental health benefits of growing food. There's quite a number of studies on this.
Right.
Gardening, immersing yourself in green, and especially if you're in a really hostile environment like space, that is actually so important for the astronauts' sense of well-being.
Yeah. But the food itself, I mean, like I said, they're able to put it into a variety of different formats that are totally exactly what you'd find at a grocery store. So it's nothing particularly esoteric when it actually makes it to the end user.
So yeah, so what does the meat, the protein look like in particular?
I've tried their meatballs and they look just like meatballs.
Really?
It's not like a Beyond Meat, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah, okay. It's except that it's like a lot smaller and
this big.
Well, it depends.
Meatball, my friend.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. The meatballs. They're trying to figure out how to make them smaller, but they just can't. They just can't make them smaller. They're this big, always this big.
It's one meatball for everybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
And by the way, we're not just talking about food from one team. It's an array of food
solutions. It's a smorgasbord.
Yeah, it's a lot of different things. Well, the buffet, a smorgasbord.
Yeah, but I've tried the meatballs from one team. I've tried there's a cream cheese. There is another kind of, I remember it was like, it reminded me of brie sort of cheese. Yeah, they make a yogurt. There's a few teams that were doing really cool stuff.
Caviar of space.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the thing is like those ingredients, which then can be produced into a bunch of different things. So this is still pretty early. So you could think about the products that they're making as like their proof of principle, really. They're like, okay, here's a raw ingredient, which is amazing. And then here's all the stuff that you could potentially make with it. But there's only, I want to say there's only one or two teams that have actually, you know, actually gotten to the point where they put something in the grocery store. Where it's fully productized.
There's teams that have productized this.
Yeah.
Front end, and it's getting stocked.
Yeah. That is amazing. And a lot of it comes down to how favorable the regulatory environment is. So there's a company.
How progressive the supermarket wants to be.
Yeah. Like,
get ready for your trip to Mars.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a prepper's dream.
Tastes like space. Yeah. There's a team that's out of Finland, and I think they might have it in Finland. But I know that they have it in Singapore. Singapore is extremely open-minded when it comes to futuristic foods.
Wow. And so are there other untapped space passions that you two have? That you're tackling food, you're tackling
I have one.
Come on, let's talk about that.
I want to do a Gundam fight club on the moon. So that
I'm sorry, what? Sorry. Wow.
Is this like an Elon, Mark Zuckerberg situation? They're fighting in the...
Yeah,
we did not discuss
it. My question is,
can the Global Affair be the exclusive...
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to do, I've always believed in trial by combat. And so I think it'll solve a lot of problems. And so you can go to a very low gravity environment and make giant robots that fight each other, which I think would just be fun.
How about you, Flo? Do you have any?
Oh gosh, what a great question. Yeah. Honestly, I had an interest growing up in sustainable fashion design and textile design and textiles and fashions that are great for space, but also expressive and artistic and creative. I think is dope.
Is this a niche that other people are tackling right now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And like, what is the opportunities now? Like, where are the opportunities now for like exponential entrepreneurs to enter this space? Right. If they're like, they have a vision, they want to actualize it. Is the ecosystem open now to exponential entrepreneurship?
I would say that yes. In every space conference or...
I'm speaking to our listeners. They're all exponential entrepreneurs. Yes.
Yeah. Every space conference, every time we have these kinds of conversations with folks like at NASA and other private space agencies and institutions, it's about all talent is welcome. You do not have to be a technical
person. Everyone is welcome in space?
Yes. Yes. There's space for everyone.
They don't all get a helmet.
There's space for everyone.
Until we start drawing kind of invisible borders through the Milky Way.
The creative arts is especially welcomed in space. Like writers, artists,
filmologists.
Filmographers.
It's end of the day, by the way. We've all been at a conference literally all day long.
I have also been talking.
And you've been moderating all day long.
You're doing great,
which was unexpected.
We appreciate you.
I apologize. But yes, it's open. There's space for everybody.
Where can one start to learn about this? Because I first learned about this at the Wake Forest Institute, and there was a space panel. And I was like, wait, what?
The NASA website is amazing. NASA.gov. it's also great that all the images and, mm-hmm. and the videos there you can use for anything. It's public and not copyrighted material.
Yeah.
What else this would be good inspiration?
Let's go to conferences, meet people.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite conferences to go to for this?
If you want to just jump in head first, go to one of the IACs, mm-hmm. International Astronomical Congress. Those are cool. That's the first like real space conference that I went to. And it's pretty enormous.
We brought Martha Stewart to the last one.
Did you?
Last year in Dubai. She was great because
such
she actually
a combination of information.
So yeah,
no one has ever said that sentence before.
Martha, if you hear this, and I'll send it to you and your team. She actually developed the space menu for the ISS 2 times. Her ex-boyfriend was a former Microsoft VP, and he went up to the ISS twice. And she designed the food menu twice.
Who knew?
And she's a futurist and a visionary. Yeah, is really. She runs Absolutely. Circles around me and Dane and everybody else. So yeah.
This is such an exciting and compelling time to just be on this planet and then hopefully other planets at some point. And I know the both of you and specifically the conversations we were having yesterday, Florina, you've got a multitude of passions and things that you're wanting to be working on. And are working on, and I'd love to just give you both the opportunity whilst on the show to chat about anything other than space now that I've selfishly asked you all the questions that I have about space.
Not selfish at all. It's we love it. Did you want to kick it off?
Yeah, I mean, well, so we're both working on a new challenge series, which tentatively is called the BioAvatar Challenge. We hope that it runs for 10 years. The holy grail, I think, of drug development and precision medicine and all of the things that really need to speed up is you want to end up with a proper predictive models of human biology. You want to be able to have a proper digital human being and that you can develop drugs for, and then you can deliver drugs to like a real actual version of that digital person. So the first part of that challenge is around predicting toxicity with probably microphysiological systems. So maybe they're going to be a little bit bigger, but like tissue chips, humans on a chip. And so we're starting that probably, let's call it the beginning of next year or so.
It's in development.
Yeah. And once that wraps up, then each successive stage of the challenge is going to be more towards, I'd say, developing disease and syndrome models.
The aim of this is to help all boats rise in biotech and longevity, because this will help move the paradigm from the animal model be more inclusive towards technologies, alternatives that are ethical, but even more than that, more predictive, because it's actual human biology. And so for me, the holy grail is actual personalized medicine, where if by chance, I think I shared this with you
yesterday. So this is where the synergy between in truth. Yeah.
If I get breast cancer, I want to be able to have my stem cells regenerated, breast stem cells, my breast tissue regenerated in a lab and have medications, drugs tested for my tissue.
Right.
And I would know with almost absolute certainty if it will work or if it will not. And I won't have to suffer through a clinical trial.
I think sometimes the uncertainty is actually the thing that perpetuates the trauma of going through an illness. Yeah. And is this where your passion, Florina, for understanding the autonomic nervous system started to arise from? Just curious.
That is one of my interests, yes.
Yeah.
But
within healthcare.
Yes, within healthcare.
Yeah, incredible. It's such an important, just hand on heart, thank you. It's such an important space. We need to understand the nervous system's influence on our health, the emotional body's influence on our health, and I think it's still so largely misunderstood and it's definitely not measured.
Absolutely. We're barely scratching the surface in that arena, but I think I told you I just read a paper on astrocytes that's in the brain and how a child trauma literally affects you for the rest of your life.
It does. Yeah.
Your brain physiology, your immune system response. It's so impactful, and we're barely just understanding how that works right now.
Yeah.
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 Well, this has been a great wrap to this conference. Psy and longevity and lifespan at IO.
The intersections of longevity is touching. It's like longevity in space. It makes so much sense.
Yes.
But
yes.
It's also for these guys, I hope you're finding this a really interesting conversation. To know that this work is being done, that not only is this work being done at a visionary level, but we're niching down now into who's going to design the best streetwear for outer space and who's going to create the best food and be able to print the best food for outer space and everything in between. It's amazing.
Yes. And for me personally, longevity is really about just human health. How do we expand that? How do we extend healthy life.
Health.
And that's a universal, that should be a universal interest, I think.
100%. Yeah. I've loved this conversation. How can any of our listeners support the work that you're doing?
mfoundation.org. Yeah. And its partner for this bio avatar challenge is the Center for Contemporary Sciences. Mm-hmm. We are working to advance human, animal, and planetary health. And we're also a policy and advocacy organization. So at a policy level, trying to make some changes to help move the needle there.
Amazing.
Yeah.
We're also working on a biomarkers of aging consortium. So they presented a little bit earlier today. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to do a better job of measuring biological age and predicting mortality and multimorbidity and that sort of thing.
So what's the website for that?
That's agingconsortium.org.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's cool. Actually a really fun one.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you both so much for coming on The Global Affair. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Lifespan, for curating this event and bringing us all together.
Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you, Lifespan.
Thanks, Lifespan. Let's have more of it.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed the show, please let us know by leaving a review or sharing the episode with someone you love and expanding this conversation as far and wide as possible. If you're looking for a community to have conversations with about global affairs, please jump in our Telegram group or join our free think tanks. Thanks for being a part of the shift towards a love-based civilization. We'll see you in the Telegram group or in the next episode.